A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the movie podcast where two films with something in common go head-to-head to figure out which one did it better. On Monday, Kathleen Turner played a lonely romance novelist who embarked on an adventure like the ones in her books in Romancing the Stone. While today, Sandra Bullock plays a lonely romance novelist who embarks on an adventure like the one in her books in The Lost City.
Don't panic.
What do you mean, don't panic?
Just don't panic.
No, don't stop saying panic.
Okay,
I'm panicking
okay.
Now.
You have something on your back.
No!
Stop screaming.
What is that? Do you have any on you?
No.
Why don't you have any on you?
Maybe the jumpsuit scared him off. I don't know.
Get him off.
Oh, my God.
Get
okay.
him off.
No, I can't touch this blood-gorged mucus sac. Can
right
you fling
now.
It? Can you? Why don't
get
you
it.
Just pick it and fling it? Just pick it and
you
fling it.
You pick it and fling it.
Can you spin
please
it off?
Please get it off. Get it off. I don't like touching
okay,
it.
Okay.
I don't. I'm feeling faint. They're sucking
okay,
it off.
Okay.
They're sucking my soul out.
Stop.
So which one wins? You're about to find out in Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Chris Tilley.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And we are still a Zane-free zone, meaning you're stuck with me on hosting duties. I'm sorry. First things first, Vicky,
yeah.
Do you want to reiterate why you picked this pair?
Because The Lost City is almost so perfectly designed for me because it's got a lot of my favourite elements in. So I was very excited about it and I have good memories of Romancing the Stone. And then I haven't seen Romancing the Stone for a few years, but there are some, which we're about to get into, there are some elements that are so directly lifted from The Lost City as to make it a viable comparison.
Sure.
Sorry, the other way around.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it actually annoyed me a little bit.
I think I heard you before we started recording. You did sound really mad when you were talking to Charlie about
it. Yeah, a little bit annoyed. But first things first, we love an iTunes review here at Clash Pod, and we read some of our favourites out, don't we, Vicky?
You do, yes.
So here's one entitled, Chris and Vicky are Miserable.
Oh, no!
The message is short and to the point.
Is it horrible?
I swear Alex is the only person on this podcast that actually enjoys movies.
Oh, God.
2 stars.
Oh, Chris.
And that comes from BanterSwag42069.
You're not supposed to bring this to my door. I'm not on the socials because I don't want to deal with any bad vibes ever. Because I can't. Because I'm like a child and I become bitter and upset and very vengeful.
Why are you miserable and why don't you enjoy movies, Vicky? The two big questions that BanterSwag42069
I can get into it, babe. I do enjoy them. I just
do you? Yeah. Is that what you do, movie podcast? That review, though, it's funny. That review was written the day that the Free Guy episode went live,
okay.
Which seemed to upset more people than I was expecting.
Really?
Yeah, we got a few messages from people annoyed.
Say, leave it alone.
That Alex loved it, you liked it, and I thought it was okay.
And that was
which
bad.
I think is pretty fair, isn't it? Is that not
considering,
a fair assessment?
Yeah.
So I feel like this is connected to Free Guy. And if that's the hill you want to die on, Banter Swag 42069,
then, you know,
you do you, man.
To their own.
You do you.
This is the thing, and we've said it before, you don't come for the gamers. I don't know what, how this has happened, but that's the thing, isn't it? Don't go for them.
Don't go for the gamers. Right, on to a film we definitely both love. Vicky, please take us on a journey.
I once had a dream where my favourite comedy actor teamed up with my favourite sexy actor and mined the rich thematic seam of one of my favourite films and then threw in my favourite legit movie star for a memorable cameo and my favourite big tentpole franchise actor as the evil British villain. And then I woke up and the Lost City was real, because Hollywood is not as stupid as I think sometimes and can make a movie that is so specifically designed to get people like me into the cinema that I waited 6 months till it was on a streamer and watched it for a podcast, which gives me absolutely no credibility every time I wail that Hollywood ignores women and thinks women don't go to the pictures, because bafflingly even I, who dreamt up this perfectly crafted movie, didn't go to the cinema to watch it. At which point you've got to ask, what will it take, Vicky, for you to get up off your fat ass and spend £11? Oh wait, bring it in at 90 minutes and then we'll talk. It's true though, like, what do they have to do? I don't, you know, like Cineworld is closed, and I was like, oh, that's really sad. And Mark was like, oh, you never go to the cinema anyway. And I was like, but I want it to be there. I love the cinema. There are logistical issues around getting me to the cinema these days that are not insurmountable, but they're just expensive. So I am guilty of, like, if it's a massive thing, I will go. But, you know, this is the sort of, we talk about all the time about the death of, you know, original material, and it's, you know, this doesn't have an underlying IP, and I should have gone to see this multiple times and I didn't. And I had really enjoyed it, but, and it's just a shame I couldn't commit to the theatrical release.
So are you saying after you'd seen it the first time, you would have seen it several more times at the cinema?
No, I'm not saying that. No,
because that's mad.
That is mad. But that's my history. I was, you know, the fucking... In Lewisham, anyway, the poster for this, and we'll get onto the jumpsuit, because the jumpsuit is like the central character of this film. Mm. But that thing that they're very proud of, that shot of Sandra Bullock in a jumpsuit, in a wheelbarrow, that, you know, that was on the sides of buses in Lewisham for, it feels like, my entire life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still didn't go to the pictures to see it. So this is a first time watch. This is a circuitous way of me saying it's a first time watch.
Okay.
I assume you went to the pictures to see it because it's your work.
No, but it's definitely in my wheelhouse, and I like the trailers, but I don't know. It was a weird time, though, I think, when this came out as well.
It might have been. Was it earlier this year?
It was at the start of the year. I don't know. No, I wasn't interested enough. This did feel like one I could wait until it was for free on Sky. We didn't manage that as I wanted us to. so I'm sorry if anyone had to pay for this.
I paid for it. I don't mind.
I know, but you're doing it professionally.
I'm doing it professionally, but I was pleased because I did try to pay for it a while ago and I was like, it's £14, I'm not paying that. And then it was £3.50 and that was fine.
Yeah. So it features your favourite tentpole actor.
So I'm going to say that about Radcliffe. It's because I like Radcliffe a lot, but I think I like him more as a person than I do as Harry Potter. But for the purpose of my very funny synopsis...
Okay. I just made a note of that. More than Harrison Ford?
No. No, but you got to come up with something. I saw this interview with Sandra Bullock and Daniel Radcliffe, and he looks terrified of her because... I mean, I do have a bit of a blind spot here, but she is, a phenomenal presence, and he just looks nervous as all hell, like a normal person would, and that's very endearing.
He's very, you know, I've met him a few times, interviewed him a couple of times. He's just a very sweet man.
Yeah, and he seems like it, so I like him.
Mm.
All right, then. So, do you want to know about... Before I had to do the background to this film, Alex, I was like, I wonder if it's like Sandra Bullock was obsessed with remaking Romancing in the Stone and pushed it forward. You know, she's a producing powerhouse and she could kind of do what she wants. And I was very disappointed to find out that that was not the case. So...
Yeah, because there was, about 10 years ago, there was a Romancing the Stone remake on the cards.
For telly, or do you know, or for...
No, it was Gerard Butler.
Oh, right, yeah, I'll go and see that.
And who is the woman who was in Knocked Up?
Oh, God, what's she called?
Grey's Anatomy, I think she was in.
Catherine Heigl.
Yeah, I think they were going to be the two roles.
Yeah.
I'm glad it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean... Like
although Gerard Butler's a terrific actor, and if he ever wants to play a pirate, he does need to give me a ring.
That's right, you've got the part for him. And he will do.
He has been earmarked.
It's an exclusive. Yeah, no one else can fill that role. So it's just one of those things, like, you know, when you saw the credits... Initially, when I saw the credits, I was like, oh, okay, it felt like it explained a lot. There's quite a lot of writers on this project, and that doesn't tend to be a brilliant sign, like, a lot of the time. it's based on an idea by Seth Gordon, and then Oren Uziel wrote the original screenplay. But anyway, it's going nowhere for years. So Sandra, my Sandra, she read it, she passed on it because she thought it felt dated, and then around 7 years later, it comes back to her. And by this point, Paramount are saying to her, you can do what you like with it. And she said in this interview that was a massive change for her. Like, once you're told you can do what you want, it becomes a bit more of an attractive proposition. So you can head it up and you can produce it. I think that's what you want anyway, if you want Sandra Bullock to be in your film. Like, this is her zone. Like, you know, she can do comedy, she can do the drama, she's America's sweetheart, all the rest of it. I don't know why you wouldn't want her to be as involved as possible. But then the script needs reinvigorating, and so Dana Fox has a go at that, just to get those all those elements, in Sandra Bullock's words, fully integrated, action, comedy and drama. I do think it's a bit patchy at times, in terms of that. But, you know, I can see that they're having a go at it. And I don't think it completely fails to do that either. We'll come back to that, obviously. Now, the Nee brothers, they become hot after they put together a pitch for Bumblebee, which they did, obviously they didn't get Bumblebee. Did you see their short film?
No, what is it?
So what they did is they were invited to pitch for Bumblebee, and one of the brothers, I can't remember which one, has got this VFX background. So they CGI the Transformers, but the robot thing, and they put one of the other's daughter in it. So it's a short film. It's really sweet. I'm not a massive like Transformers fan, so but I like CG, and I, you know, I like what effects can do, and I like a good child actor. But if I'm being completely honest, I found it a little bit cloying, because it's just a bit... the pace is just a bit like, you know, it works if you love Transformers and you're like, wow, look at that. What they wanted to do is show that they could handle the sort of shots, music, action that a huge movie like Bumblebee would require. And I do think it 100% does that.
Yeah, and I haven't seen it, as I said. But yeah, with that film, they were trying to go in a different direction where it was a bit more emotional.
Yeah, yeah, and they nailed that.
It was like the E.T. of the Transformers movies.
And exactly.
It's the first half of Bumblebee's great.
Yeah.
It's sort of, then it turns into any other Transformers
movie.
Well,
this is the thing. Yeah, it's just not my sort of thing. But I can see why, if you weren't expecting them to be able to do that, this short would cause a big fuss, because they're basically like, we could have done Bumblebee. Like, it's extremely competent. And they're huge fans of Amblin movies, and they like Robert Zemeckis movies. And so the short gets passed around a lot, and it's like, these guys like that sort of material, so let's start considering them for that sort of material, which gets them in the room for The Lost City. Daniel Radcliffe was cast because Sandra wanted someone, in her words, hot and sexy to play a sociopath. Yeah, I know. She said, I want someone who's been on the cover of GQ to play that. And I was like, Daniel Radcliffe probably has been on the cover of GQ.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't know. I think he's actually quite sexy in this. I think it's mostly because he's got a really excellent haircut. So, I get a bit obsessed with things like that. Channing Tatum. Look, if you want women of a certain age in a movie theatre, put Channing Tatum in it and that will work for you. And I'm being snide about that, but that demographic, women over 35, is what put this through the roof. This was a huge smash. What did it make? $190 million off a $68 million budget. That's massive.
Yeah.
61% or something of the people that went to see it in the opening weekend were women over 35. Sure. Those are your bums on seats. So yeah, that is all I have.
Excellent. Well, I had nothing, so that was all new to me.
Thank God that I did it, because I wasn't going to.
It was your job.
I honestly considered, because I was a little bit up against it this morning, being like, will Chris get mad if I just make it up entirely? And I was like, Sandra Bullock found an ancient scroll and it had the script for Lost City.
I feel like you might have made up that thing she said about Daniel Radcliffe. But I'm not going to say anything negative about Dan.
No.
Big fan.
All right, so let's get into it, shall we? So here's my girl, Sandra. She's put herself in the fantasy, the opening fantasy. Mm. Now, Joan in Romancing the Stone doesn't. She's narrating it, but it's another female actor. So I think it's good for the character of Loretta, because it's like, oh yeah, you want to get out there, you want to be having a life. But the problem is, this film hinges on, you don't like Dash, you don't like Alan, played by Channing Tatum, but we've just seen them. The establishing shot is them rolling around on the floor together in a pit full of snakes, or whatever it is. So all their little negging and all their back and forth later, you can't get this image out of your head, which you've just seen. You think she likes him because she's imagined herself with him.
Yeah.
So I think it's a mistake.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. But I guess she thought, well, we've got to change one aspect of this scene that we're copying and pasting.
Yeah.
But it's very Indiana Jones, but it's a massive piss take of Indy as well, isn't it? But by making it about the snakes.
The snakes, yeah.
Yeah.
And I enjoy seeing it, but a lot of my review, that's a bit highfalutin, words that I will say about this film, it's so coloured by the fact that I'm essentially in love with Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum, so it's very hard for me to see stuff. So you can correct me if I'm being too generous. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so Sandra, she's got writer's block, but it's like perfect writer's block because she's Sandra Bullock. But then wait a minute, she's a freaking widow, which I was not expecting.
No.
That comes kind of out of left field, talking about sort of making sure those elements all integrate. I wasn't expecting it. I was a little bit put out by it because it's like, oh, that just muddies the romance a bit because you're actually in grief. But I think it works and I think it provides an emotional through line that I enjoyed.
Are you annoyed that they fridged the husband?
No,
oh, it doesn't matter here.
It doesn't matter
one when it's
a
bloke.
Yeah, yay!
I hope she killed him. But they make a big deal that she's got to see what's on the other side of the door in his office.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't really... I feel like they're setting stuff up there that doesn't really pay off. I know we get stuff about, you know, the work that they did together, but I just feel like that's quite an interesting concept going on there.
Yeah.
Because the room looks amazing.
It does, yeah.
But, yeah, it's just sort of never followed up upon.
Just closes that door. So she's promoting the Lost City of D, which the joke about it being Lost City of Dick, I think is funny because the minute you hear Lost City of D, Dick, I like that.
Yeah, D for Dash or Dick.
Yeah, brilliant.
No, it's an ancient tribe.
Which I didn't write down the bloody name of, which is bad podcasting this week, but never mind. I don't think anyone cares. So we're going to meet Alan. We're at the book launch. And if we're honest about what this whole scene is, it's establishing the other protagonist of this cheery romp, which is this sequin jumpsuit. So I love it on the poster. I think it's very funny. But I'm disappointed by the jumpsuit setup because it is such a big part of this film. Like, ah, ha, ha, sequins in the jungle. Hilarious. Get it? Fine. The visual contrast is all fine. But I think the way we get to the jumpsuit just should be funny because who does a book launch in a jumpsuit like that anyway?
I agree. She's not a sex pot.
No.
The opposite, in fact. And so, yeah, they're trying to make... I don't know what they're doing, but I hate it. I hate it. And it smacks to me of, you know, she looks amazing in it. And she knows she looks amazing in it. So so it's shoehorned in there in a way that it just made me a bit uncomfortable, to be honest.
Well, because her publisher, she's called Beth, gives it to her. But it should be forced on her because... The smart thing she was going to wear for the book tour, the book launch, which is what a writer would wear, is hilariously destroyed. Or she picks it in a fit of pique or of some description. But her publisher goes, wear this. And she's like, I don't want to. And then it's like, okay, I thought the setup was going to be much more satisfying than that. So anyway, but this is, you know, being very nitpicky. And then we meet Dash and that entrance is fun and we see those little sparks of I hate you, which is so important for a film like this. And they're just so different, I guess.
So Dash has been brought there to interview her.
Yeah.
That's quite a strange thing as well. I don't really understand why Dash would be interviewing her.
Well, I suppose the film is saying he's the main draw now. And so we want to get as many bums on seats at this thing as possible, and so him interviewing you is what will draw the crowd, although it's quite a small crowd actually, so maybe not. Anyway, quickly moving on, Radcliffe as Abigail Fairfax. Now, I mean, just be me for a second, not mad about that joke about the gender neutral name, because the joke I think is her going, it's not gender neutral. So then the joke then necessarily becomes, oh, you've got a girl's name. And that's not funny. So I don't know. It feels really of its time, but it was 6 months ago. So I don't like it.
There's a lot of stuff that feels dated. Like there's a Shawn Mendes joke that I don't think...
There's three or four Shawn Mendes jokes.
Is that going to last that long?
I always find that mad. Like when you're writing, you always resist putting something in that's like this. You can now tag your script to a certain month of a certain year. Like you don't want to do that. Oh, no, wait, we're idiots though. Maybe they were paid. I don't know. I've made that up. Shawn Mendes' people were like, get me in there. Okay. Do you think?
What, product placement?
Yeah.
Of a name?
Yeah.
of a human being's name?
Yeah.
No, I think
we need
I think
to do
how
the
that
Venn
works.
Diagram of Sandra Bullock's commercial interests,
okay,
and Shawn Mendes' commercial interests.
I mean, how that normally would work is he would then sing the song over the end, like say Billy Ocean doing
yeah.
"When the Going
yeah,
Gets Tough."
That does make
in
a lot
fact,
of sense.
They didn't nick that. They may as well have put "When the Going Gets Tough" in this film.
The trouble is, every time I have a thought like that, where I'm like, ah, and I'm not mad about that. There's just things in this film. It's like they've been in my dreams where Daniel Radcliffe is like, I read that you like cheese and so I got all of them. I'm a big cheese fan. Mm. Big cheese fan. So for me, I've got Sandra Bullock and a cheese board in front of me and there's just part, my dopamine is just going off. Like, I can't help it. I'm like, I love this film because of all those things. But how did they know I love cheese as much as I do? I don't know.
I don't know, Vicky. I don't know what you're talking about anymore.
Anyway, but that's okay because we're going to talk about Brad Pitt. So don't worry. So you'll feel more comfortable. So Brad Pitt as Jack Traynor. Channing Tatum meets him at the airport of the island to which Sandra Bullock as Loretta has been kidnapped, wished away.
She's been tooken.
She's been tooken.
Is this taken? Am I tooken?
But that's a funny joke. But then someone else uses the taken joke again later and it's like...
can't do it twice.
Because it's not that strong. It's fine for a one-off.
Yeah.
But yeah, Brad Pitt as this sort of, you know, this ex-CIA, black ops agent, whatever it is he's supposed to be. And he's got this sort of bedraggled man of the woods thing. And then you want to do a bit of a contrast with Alan's more sort of like preening. He's not preening, but he's like a modern man and he's got his little neck cushion and he's got his pods in his ears and stuff like that. And they're so cute together.
Sure.
What we'll get to is they're going to storm the complex. They're going to get Loretta out of there. And it's when I realised that we were watching a Certificate 12 because it's not violent. And so it's done by people get, you know, sort of conveniently knocked out.
18 violence.
Yeah, brilliant. So I was like, oh, and I double checked. I was like, oh, it's a 12. However, I think they do it so that when they then blow Jack's head off, you weren't expecting it.
Very effective.
Yeah, this is the thing. So I know I've been manipulated because you did the kiddie stuff so that Jack getting his head blown off is such a shocker. And I don't care because my reaction is like, wow, amazing, awesome.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I think there's an issue with that.
I was just sad to see Jack go. I get it as the surprise cameo that then gets surprise killed off.
Yes.
Although he's not a surprise cameo, isn't he? Because he's in all the posters. But I just wish we just spent a little bit more time. I just, maybe a scene or two later. But I don't know. Maybe it's memorable because it's so soon.
Mm.
Yes.
I think that's the point. And yeah, I was genuinely surprised. I guess you got a sense of it because I don't know, you know, he wasn't star billed, I don't think, on it. And so you think, oh, something's going on here.
Yeah.
His name isn't above the poster, but he's in the trailers.
But he's in the poster. It's just because I'm so, like, those bus adverts are just burned into my mind. But then maybe it's because people don't advertise on buses in Lewisham that much, because that's true, isn't it? If the advert stays on there until you get a new advert, you don't get a limited time run. So I think they're still on
buses. I don't know enough about bus
advertising. Do you know, I do know quite a bit about bus advertising because of working for charities and some bright spark, a trustee, not in my current job, I just hasten to add, will say, why don't we do bus adverts? And the answer is, they're prohibitively expensive.
Right. I thought you were going to say you know about it from your time as an agent where someone said, I need to be on there for 14 months.
Yeah.
That Lewisham bus.
Yeah. Well, no one advertises in Lewisham, so I'll get you on the 436 and you will be there for 14 months.
My head isn't as big as Radcliffe's.
So, yes. Now, this, you're going to kill me for saying this, but one of my biggest issues with Romancing the Stone, which I don't have here, is that I think where are we going now? We're in Act Two. Alan and Loretta are on an adventure together now and they're on a quest and she's got a map that she's stolen and she's translating it. And there's a reason why she was the woman for the job, which isn't just that she's someone's sister-in-law, it's that she conveniently knows this ancient language that no one else knows. And so even though it's super light touch, as in not as satisfying as Indiana Jones in any way, at least we're going to get a little bit of clues and problem solving and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, I agree. It's far too wishy washy what happens in Romancing the Stone in terms of plot and it's far too based around coincidence.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, she's been brought there for a reason and she uses her skills. In fact, I would like to see her use them more.
Yes, I'd like the riddle to be more complicated.
Yeah, because the puzzle solving seems just a bit basic and a bit...
Well, and also, the trouble is, because my brain kicks in, you're like, well, we're going to solve a puzzle. And even, you know, at The Last Crusade, the puzzle is complicated enough for me. I'm not brilliant with riddles and stuff like that. But she's like the tears or something. The crown of, what's it called? The crown of fire is in the tears. And she stood by a waterfall. So you're like, we're through that then. isn't it?
Yeah.
And then it's not. So fuck me. But
there is a lot. They actually put too much here. He's looking for a priceless headdress,
yeah,
a final resting place, a crown of fire. It's just, there's actually too much for my brain to cope with. So
the riddle was too complicated for you.
Yeah. Okay. I think they just make it confusing here when they just need to be focused. Because I think it's all the same thing, ultimately.
Yeah, yeah. The final resting place is where all of this stuff is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just thought she's like, the tears of the thing. And then you're by the waterfall and she was going to do that classic thing where you just push a brick and you go through the waterfall and then you're in a magical cave.
Sorry that didn't happen, Vicky. But as you say, it feels like it might have been another film. So go and watch one of them.
Yes. So I'll come back to this bit after a short break.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So, I want to talk about eczema for a while. There's a scene right now with Loretta and Alan, and they're in the jungle, and they've somehow... The baddies that are pursuing them somehow haven't found them, which feels unrealistic, but fine, whatever. So we've got this scene where Channing Tatum is an eczema sufferer, which is why he doesn't like getting in the water. And it's going to be the scene where Loretta and Alan come closer, and it's got the comedy chops in it that she's applying cream or whatever, or no, a face mask to his back, which is very funny. But it really, it took me by surprise how genuinely a little bit moved I was by this scene. So I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, what is happening? Mm. Bear in mind, I watched this the day I got back from holiday. So I was feeling, I was in a weird headspace anyway. And when doesn't she talk about crestallations or undulations of of a rash? And I was like, that is quite powerfully sexy. What is happening? I've realised what's happening. I'm an eczema sufferer. Mm. And basically, my favourite woman and favourite man in the whole world are telling me it's fit. And so I've really fallen
right,
for that.
Okay.
Which I've never thought of it as. I've always found it quite a confidence knocker for me. I would very much big up someone else that had it. But for myself personally, I've always found it a little bit tricky to deal with. Now I don't need to worry about it because Sandra Bullock thinks it's attractive. And Channing Tatum is attractive. And he has eczema on his back. What? Not in real life, probably.
Two things. I'm very happy for you that you got that out of this film, and I can't even remember that scene.
Can you not? It's so weird because it's all funny, like the face mask.
Quite a lot of this film I can't remember.
She's like,
I only watched
her hands
it 4 days
over
ago.
His back, and he's like, oh, do it again, whatever. And she's like, well, I will. And then she's like, he's like, oh, you're not grossed out, because she's rubbing a rash, and she's like, no, I'm not. And he makes her like talk about his back rash the way that a romance novelist would. And you think it's going to be pure funny. So again, this thing that Dana Fox was hired to do, which is bring together all these elements that they wanted, action, drama, comedy. There's no action in this scene, but it's bringing together drama and comedy. It shouldn't work. It probably doesn't. But for me, I was like, I think that's good. I think that does it, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you keep describing it to me. I'm still not remembering
it. But you don't even remember it. So, no. But then maybe that's for the best.
I vaguely remember it. I remember the leeches.
Maybe it's... Well, I remember the leeches as well, yeah. And then, the joke about him having a massive penis and stuff like that, which I couldn't concentrate on because I'm terrified of leeches.
He's very funny in that scene, though, where he thinks they're sucking out his soul.
We're all terrified of leeches because of Stand By Me. That's the
sure,
thing.
Yeah. That's the ultimate scene. I found that scene kind of disappointing, though. When it's, I mean, I feel like it's pretty clear that I don't think it's him.
Oh, do you think?
No, obviously there's certain shots when it is him because he's got the body, but there's certain moments where you would put them both in the same shot if this is what's happening,
yeah,
because
I'm
we
so
want
naive.
To see it, whereas we're not. We're too close in on his. Ass.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a body double.
Wow.
Oh, I could be totally wrong here.
No, but I'm so naive. I just don't... I think as well, because if you were an actor, you'd be like, well, if I don't have to get my own bum out, I'd rather not, obviously.
If you're Channing Tatum, you might want your bum.
Yeah,
you might want your bum. I just feel like there's not a proper shot, I don't think, where we get where you can see both of them.
Shot, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he comes across as so very confident because of the Magic Mike 1 and 2 and also the Stage Show franchise.
Yeah, he didn't care.
But yeah.
I probably got that completely wrong. But and if that's the case, if there is a leech on his dick, as the film claims, then let's see it. Let's see Dick Leech.
God, what was I watching last night? Have you watched that Netflix thing called Trainwreck about Woodstock 99?
No.
Everyone's been going on about it. It's really good.
It's because I watched the document we talked about. I watched the documentary last year about Woodstock. Are we going to do one every year?
This is the thing. I was like, the failed festival documentary genre, subgenre on Netflix.
Multiple failed festival documentaries about the same festival.
But there's the final day. It's the Sunday and the Red Hot Chili Peppers are playing. And Flea is there and he's got his blue hair and he's jumping around and he's completely naked, which I'd kind of forgotten that was a thing.
That was their thing, yeah.
And it's just banging around on the guitar. It's madness to me.
Put a sock on it.
At least. Or something harder, like to protect yourself from... And I love how little he gives a fuck about stuff like that, obviously. Mm. Like, full power to him. But it's just boinging around, slapping that bass.
Slapping under bass.
I found it so upsetting. I was such a prude in my older age. I was just, no, I'm not prudish. I was just worried for his safety. It's like, if you get it caught, which you will, it's going to rip. Anyway. So then the Alan and Loretta, they share a hammock and they're romance and they're growing closer. But there's a kind of early low point here where they fall out and they tell each other some truths. And she's like, you're just a cover model kind of thing. I like it. It's cool. It's fun, whatever. But Alan's character for me in terms of where this classic rom-com arc is, which is we hate each other. We hate each other. We love each other. Alan's on the back foot because he already liked her.
Yeah.
And I think you should have written it differently where he never liked her either. And so, I mean, that writes itself kind of thing. I don't know why it is that he always liked her.
It's weird, yeah. And he's never said anything. It's all very sudden that he wants to tell her. But I don't really understand his character all that well because they set him up as stupid and not knowing about history. And then he's like a history buff by the end of it. He's interested in these things. And that weird story he tells about being embarrassed and then not being embarrassed about being a cover model.
Yeah.
And so he can say, don't judge a book by its cover. I didn't really, that story didn't make me care.
It didn't hit home enough.
No.
The way to do it is, when I first met you, Loretta, I thought you were generous and fun and we were going to do something amazing together. And then you've just entrenched and withdrawn and you're bitter and you're not the person I thought you were. And I hate you. You've ruined my life. I've ruined your life. Brilliant. And then they can reconcile. But he's like, essentially saying, this is awkward for me because I really like you and you don't like me.
Yeah. And these are the scenes where you've got the Nee brothers saying that they shot it all. Well, in the interviews I read, it was all about how tough it was in the jungle filming all this. And this is all the stuff that's on a soundstage. And it's just, it looks so artificial.
Yeah.
We're in 2022. Like, I feel like, can they not make it look more a jungle?
Yeah, why lie?
There's no jungle noises in some of these scenes.
Are
and I'm
you
like,
sure?
put some birds in the background.
Are you sure?
Just make me feel like I'm in a jungle. Why don't they introduce noises of jungle? Question mark. Barely anything. Exclamation mark. So weird. Exclamation mark.
I hadn't noticed. Where the chirping of an insect, anything. But no, there's nothing. I hadn't noticed. I didn't know.
Maybe it was one specific scene where there wasn't anything, but like...
You could just hear like... the echo off the soundstage. Oh, I hadn't noticed. That's very funny. So this bloody jumpsuit pays off, kind of, eventually, when it's torn to bits to distract the baddies, and one of them, and two of them go over a cliff, whatever.
Yeah, and so again, she's doing the, she's turning from helpless into hero, like Joan did. She's you know, she's cleverer than the villains, and he's got his final countdown theme. He's turning into an action star, and so they're going on their journeys, they're having their arcs.
And I think so then we get some segments with Beth, the publisher, who is like going to sort it out and go over there. And I think that could have been, it's very broad, and it could have been quite jarring in its broadness. And I think that it's done really well. Like, I found Divine Joy Randolph, I thought she was really, really good in a role that's quite broad. And I wanted to see more of her. I don't like, you know, this thing, she's going to lose her temper, and it's all very predictable. But
she's really, really good in Dolomite Is My Name.
Yeah, yeah.
I will give you that. But I don't know, this just felt like a little bit of a poor man's Planes, Trains and Automobiles, her storyline.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
I actually quite liked when the dude from The Office showed up. It was a dude from the American Office, wasn't it?
At the airport?
On the boat. Maybe at the airport, but yeah, at the airport, yeah. I thought their interaction was really funny. Yeah. But it was fine.
It was just fine.
I wasn't laughing out loud.
Okay, that's fair enough. So just like Romance in the Stone, we get to the local town. We've got a costume change.
Thank you for the costume change. I needed it.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sick of that jumpsuit by now. And we've got Channing Tatum's in our film, so we are contractually obliged to have some dancing. It's better.
We're remaking Romance in the Stone, so we're contractually obliged to do some dancing, but just slightly different dancing so we don't get sued. So slightly better dancing.
Slightly better dancing. A little bit of closeness. That's good. They don't shag each other, though, which I think is better than in Romance in the Stone. It's of its time, I think, where it's like the 80s and so everybody's shagging everywhere. Because we are a bit more, with our rom-coms now, that we can be quite... They can be quite innocent in some ways. Yeah. And you know, you're building to a kiss. And that's it.
And to be fair, what do I always say?
Not now, love.
Not now, love. Not now, love. And it's one of those situations, you know? I get that people sometimes get these urges, or apparently you do in these life and death situations. But equally, you know, there's a ticking clock. Our ticking clock here is the volcano is going to erupt.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
And so, yeah, it's fine to not have sex.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's fine.
You can end with them in bed, sort of James Bond style.
It will always work.
If you have to do it.
So they're going to go to the sinkhole. They've decided. Good. But Loretta is kidnapped again, so we repeat that beat, which is a shame.
Agreed.
Then we're at the sinkhole. Then they've got to climb through this tiny hole, and that really upset me. And I think it's because we've been talking about potholing when we did Cliffhanger. And I'm in a little bit sort of a different headspace with you because I haven't been on this show for 3 weeks, so Cliffhanger is very fresh in my mind. Mm-hmm. When they send Sandra through the thing, and she gets stuck, and he's like, he does the breathing technique with her and all the rest of it. Great, nice callback to the breathing technique. He must be, Channing Tatum, twice her width. So I don't see how he gets through that hole. It freaked me to bits.
Agreed.
The idea of Channing, lovely Channing Tatum getting stuck in that hole.
Is that a fear of getting stuck in a hole?
I would never put myself in that situation. Are you not terrified to your core?
Oh, yeah. But it's making me think that we should do The Descent.
I do like that film.
It's a very good film.
Yeah, I do really like it. The thing is, I'm so scared of potholing. It's like extreme potholing where people, you know, go...
Oh, yeah, you told that horrible story. Yeah, that I'd asked you to stop.
Later, when Loretta and Alan get buried alive, I was like, that looks fine because it seemed quite roomy by comparison. Yes. Whereas when you think of Kill Bill or that thing with Ryan Reynolds, what's that called? Buried.
Oh, yeah.
That's fucking terrifying. This tomb that they're in seems quite spacious.
God, they're all good films.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to write something about someone in a box.
I mean, it's cheap. One location. Yeah. It's a great piece for an actor to have on the old reel.
I think Barry did it so well that no one else can do that now.
But then you just do it somewhere else, don't you? But then it's hard.
In a tube rather than a box.
An actual cylindrical tube, not the London like Underground
giant,
system.
Like a giant test tube.
A giant test tube. The Hadron Collider. Okay.
We're spitballing. We could do this in the pub.
copyright Vicky Crompton, Hadron Collider. Sorry.
You can't copyright the word.
I think there might be something there, is what I'm saying. So here we go. The big reveal. This crown of fire that Daniel Radcliffe, Abigail Fairfax, has been obsessed with finding, and Loretta, she's been reawakened, you know, this passion that she had with her husband, her deceased husband, which is a little bit of a fly in the ointment romance-wise, but fine. Turns out the crown of fire is seashells and that the treasure is real love.
Yes, it was a metaphor.
It was a metaphor. I don't mind this.
It's all right. You've got to come up with something, haven't you? Yeah. And it's sufficiently different. Yeah. I've not seen that before. It undercuts our villain quite nicely.
Yep.
You know, him getting enraged that he was searching for a metaphor. It's quite funny. It's not very spectacular, is it? I think this sort of fizzles out a little bit, the ending with them in the cave and swimming out and the boat shows up.
Weirdly, again, talking of the action, the comedy, the drama, and that they were so vigilant about making sure those elements combined. When they're swimming underneath, you know, through the hole kind of thing to go out to the ocean, I did find that quite scary, as in it looked quite real.
Like, sure, but you got, you know, with your Indiana Jones, you're going to have a visually spectacular finale. With Romancing the Stone, there was genuine danger there with the villain and the crocodiles.
Yeah.
And this, I just feel like it's sort of... It just made me shrug a little bit. I was waiting for something bigger to happen, and it never happened.
Well, tell me honestly, like, did you actually think that not soon after this scene, and maybe this is us because we're greedy or whatever, but someone, Alan or Loretta, would be like, oh, actually, look what's in my pocket. And it's a handful of rubies because it was a decoy or it was whatever. Not that they'd put the seashells there, but that in a film like this, which has got the motif of like glittery sparkliness in the jumpsuit, and you're looking at the font and it's called The Lost City and it's Indiana Jones, you just need to see those jewels. Like, you're desperate to see an actual handful of rubies. And I really thought that one of the characters would be like, ta-da! Like, you know, Romance in the Stone.
I'm happy with the meta. I just think we needed something, you know, a volcano erupting all over them and, running away from the lava or just... I don't know.
I do think as well, I bought it when Loretta puts her wedding ring in there and she's saying, okay, her deceased partner's called John, I think. Okay, John, I'm all right now. But it's like, he's been dead 5 years and you've not cleared out any of his stuff and now you've only just taken your wedding ring off. So you and Channing Tatum probably shouldn't be shagging for quite a while. Like, I think you might still be a little bit of a mess. So you're going to go home, clear out that study, I assume, because you're done now.
Turn it into a sex room.
A sex room for Alan, which is 100%. Don't waste any time there.
Put a stripper pole in immediately.
Yeah, and a swing and everything else. And lock him in.
And that is it. Genuine, the song.
Oh my god, it is.
Yeah, get that. Get that on the play.
Just build him. What is he in that? He's like a garage or whatever. Build him a workshop.
Get that on repeat on the speakers.
Alan, I've built you a workshop. What for? You know why? Don't be coy.
Bend over.
Boom, boom. Amazing.
I like it when they catch our villain, and you can hear her say. I think Beth says, I thought he was a little boy, but he has a full beard.
It's really funny.
Which, again, undercuts the whole sex symbol thing, saying he's a little boy.
Yeah, but it's very funny.
It's very funny. It's very funny.
So then Loretta's new book is a hit. They've been rescued. The new book is a hit. Yep. I do think that's better beat than Romancing the Stone, if I'm honest. They've been on tour. It's the end of the tour. And then we get the kiss. And maybe I'm being chased and unnecessarily, or I'm just sort of being an old lady about it. But I prefer the timing of it. And I like the fact that we wait till the end for the kiss. Now, as much as I love Channing Tatum, I don't think they're miscast. It's such a weird feeling for me. They're not miscast, because if you want a female lead and a male lead to open a movie, for me, this is catnip. Like, you can't do better than this. Do I buy them as a love interest for each other? 100% no, I don't. Mm. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a certain lack of... Their chemistry is that they're both, you know, very skilled actors in this genre and they make you believe in it. But when you see them kiss, you just don't get that. It's just something you can't fake.
I know what it is. You want it to be an older man with a younger woman.
God, I probably... Oh, my God.
Because we haven't seen that yet.
Oh, my God.
Someone needs to do that.
It's my internalised sexism again. Do you see how hard it is?
Yeah.
This is such a battle.
Yeah.
I probably do, though. On some level, I'm like, oh, you weird. Think. So, the thing is, I just don't see... Alan as Loretta's equal, because I don't see in the real world Channing Tatum as Sandra Bullock's equal, because I've got a huge blind spot when it comes to her. Well, it's not a blind spot, but it's like I think she's incredible, and there are very few men. When, you know, Ryan Reynolds is not it either. Like, it's, I've just got such high opinion of her. I'm not sure who I could put with her that I'd be like, there we go, that's the perfect kiss. So it's not necessarily the writing, it's just me being weird about Sandra Bullock.
Nah, I think she needs, well, I mean, Brad Pitt might work. Clooney.
Oh my God, yeah, that little where she's like, who are you? And it's like, yeah. Oh my God, this is the romance.
So it's in the film.
Yeah.
And, you know, Clooney and her would be.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've done it.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I'm not sure they've done it. I meant I'm sure they've done a film together.
Oh, no,
together
that, yeah,
where
no, that's me happened. Neither. That's not what I meant. So then, did you see the end credit sting thing?
I did.
It's a bit disappointing, isn't it? So Jack's back. Jack's not dead. He's in their yoga class. And it's that's it. And I was like, oh, where's the huge joke?
Don't get it. I've written it down. Jack's in the yoga class. He's alive. I don't get
this.
The
end. And this is, I'm embarrassed to say, I then spun through the rest of the credits. Like, they must do it again to pay it off. No.
No.
And it's like, you're setting up a sequel, which I assume you are. Or are you just trying to make me laugh? And that's fine, but you haven't. So.
Yeah, I actually only read one interview about this film. It was with the directors, and they sort of said, yeah, we loved Jack so much, so we were so happy to get him back at the end.
Yeah.
That's not a good enough reason to do that and to undercut what was the best joke in your film. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Unless it's got to be hilarious.
Yeah, it's got to work.
Yeah. He's this CIA operative, whatever. He should burst in and he's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm not dead. Whatever it should be. It just needs to be bigger. But anyway, on that sort of flat note, we're done. The film has ended.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
We forgot the film that George Clooney and Sandra Bullock made together.
Gravity.
Quite a big one.
But they don't get off with each other.
No romance.
They heal each other. Specifically, he heals her through sacrifice. Okay. But they can't kiss because they're wearing space helmets.
Sure. Sure.
And if they did kiss, oh my God, that would be romantic though. If we take these space helmets off, we will both die, but we will get to get off with each other.
Copyright it.
Shall I put that in the Hadron Collider idea? Yes. If I release you from the Hadron Collider, you will die, but we get to kiss each other. Choose. I tell you what, Chris, I might need 5 minutes to write this down because...
No worries, we're nearly done.
So, the bits. What was your best scene?
Brad Pitt's death.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, it's just a genuine surprise, which is a nice thing to happen when you're watching a film.
Despite the overt manipulation of your emotions prior to that with some very PG Certificate 12 action.
Fair enough. I don't know why you've got a problem with that.
I haven't. I'm just conscious of what someone's trying to do to me, and it just totally worked, I guess. And that's a little sort of pressure point for me. I hate you like that. But I love it. So, your most valuable whatever, Chris.
I don't know.
Do you really not know?
I wrote down Fabio. He's not in this film.
He's mentioned.
He is. I was gutted because I was gonna do some Fabio stuff. And then, do you remember when he was on the roller coaster?
No.
Oh, it's horrible.
What do you mean?
There's footage of Fabio on a roller coaster and a bird flies into him and breaks his face.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Is that true?
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's horrendous.
They happen to have a camera on him at the time. And so, yeah, you see, he's just covered in blood.
Oh, my God.
It's better than this film.
Yeah. Oh, that's awful.
That's my MVW.
That's really upset me for loads of reasons. Imagine how scared he would have been. That's not nice. Now I can't go on any more roller coasters, and I do enjoy roller coasters.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
But also, it's Fabio. Well, that's the thing. It's funny that maybe the only person it's ever happened to is Fabio, of all the people on Earth.
Yeah.
I've written down Channing Tatum or Sandra Bullock.
Well, yeah, fair enough. But you have to choose. You don't have to choose if you don't want to. Why don't you choose the jumpsuit? They want you to choose
the jumpsuit. No, I hated the jumpsuit. I didn't like the jumpsuit.
Okay.
Well, who are you picking?
I have to pick Sandra Bullock, but it weighs heavy on
me. You don't have to.
No, I do. That's the hill I've chosen to die on. And I'll tell you for why, Chris. When she's in the tank with Daniel Radcliffe and Alan is running to rescue her, and they've got that sort of little bit laboured kind of joke about she's going to set the thing on fire. She spills the whiskey and she gives a little look. And I was like, there's my Sandra. She's comedy genius when she wants to be. I don't think some of the material is strong enough here. But at that look, I was like, that's why I love that woman. So that's mine.
Well, I love her more than you, but I'm going Channing Tatum.
Oh, you went out with her, so...
Nearly. Mm. Channing Tatum, because he's quite funny.
That's so weak. Channing Tatum's all right in this, so I think we'll...
Channing Tatum, because he's so good in 21 Jump Street.
He's so good in Magic Mike 1 and 2. So, yes. Especially the trailer for Magic Mike 2, in which he's incredible. Yeah, fine. I don't mind. So, what would you change?
Oh, God. I've got so many things written down
here. I've got two.
I've said a few of them, though. What haven't I said? Yeah. I think, the biggest one is don't bring Brad Pitt back.
Yep.
That is a sin at the end there. I think the film's problem is the villain. And I say that a lot, but, you know, having him be Rupert Murdoch's kid and casting Daniel Radcliffe, it just isn't doing it for me. Like, even it, you know, Succession is Murdoch's kids. Maybe if you had Jeremy Strong or someone, I guess it's just a very broad comedy when the way Radcliffe is playing it.
Yeah.
And I think if you haven't got the spectacle at the end of the film, you need the threat. Yes. And I never felt the threat from Radcliffe. It was too undercut with humour and him being a baby.
And, oh, this is a terrible thing to say, but he's obviously got... He doesn't seem intimidating. Not necessarily because of his size, but he just doesn't. Mm. But then because his little army of generals and henchmen, he's undercutting them all the time. Like, he's quite mean to them and stuff like that. So you don't ever believe that he said, you need to kill her, that they would. So he's got nothing kind of thing. Maybe. I've just thought of that, but maybe it's bullshit. But I know what you mean.
Yeah, so we'll go with that. I think I've said everything else.
All
right. And stick some crocodiles in the ending.
Some snappers. yes, so I want to keep Brad for a little bit longer, like I said, because I wanted to build on the relationship between him and Alan. And what I wanted to do was for Jack to reveal that prior to him being a black ops CIA hitman murderer, he used to be a cover model as well, and look how he turned out. Because what Alan wants is to be like Jack, and Jack is 100 miles away from Alan in terms of the character. So I wanted them to have one more adventure, and then just as Jack is dying, he's like, don't worry, kid, because I was you and you can do it. And I just thought that would have been nice.
That would have been really good. I can't find it here, but I forgot my favorite line was when he's grieving about Jack's death. He says, all he wanted to do was train people. And that's just funny to me that he was called Jack Trainer. And he was.
Do you find that funny?
Yeah.
I do, yeah. I shouldn't, but I do find
just
that funny.
Wanted to train people.
That's it, isn't it? Unless I've forgotten anything because I've been off for a while.
No, I think that's it.
Cool. It's time for the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
All right, and this bit I know. This was my week.
Yeah.
These were my choices, despite the fact that I had to do more work than I was expecting. So
did I.
Yeah, you have to do a lot more work than me. Sorry, I shouldn't bitch and moan because, you have played a blinder. So I guess, do you know what? I'm going to go first. Is that all right?
Yes.
Okay, because I've been really back and forth on it, and I know that's going to make you angry.
It's just not making me angry at all.
I don't. All right, fine. I'm just going to stick to what I decided before we did the podcast, because you have changed my mind, but I'm just going to. I'll know I'll change my mind back again once we're out of this room. So, this is purely because it leans more heavily into riddle solving that the Lost City nudges it for me, because when you take the star power out of it, and that star, because the star power for me is quite overwhelming because they're my favourite people, I do like clues and I like the seashells payoff. And even though Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas are so much more believable as a couple, and we are dealing with the romance thread, there's just not enough of problem solving. And I do love problem solving. And then I got panicked. So I was like, God, that's a stupid reason. But if you go back through our Indiana Jones episodes, I think I mentioned the problem solving as the most valuable whatever like three times, because we just love stuff like that. So I also think in Romance in the Stone, I think it's probably going to have more staying power, I think that's fair to say, than The Lost City over the years. But there are so many other elements that it doesn't need, such as, hate to say it, Danny DeVito and the sister and the police and Ira. Like, I just don't think we need any of that. We need some clues. So for the clues alone, I am choosing The Lost City.
Fair enough. Wow. You wanted to take Danny DeVito out of Romancing the Stone.
I don't want to, but,
That's fine. That's fine.
And I can't. I cannot do it. I can't excise him.
So, it's funny, my reason is exactly the reason that you said you might have picked Romancing the Stone. I've written down going on chemistry and star power this week for me. And Sandra Bullock is one of my first loves. She'll be one of my last. But But her and Channing Tatum,
that's so nice,
can't compete with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. There's just some magic there that makes this movie. It didn't make the sequel because they weren't together enough. You know, it made another film that they did together, War of the Roses. There's something about those two together that is special. And it made the movie and it makes them my pick this week. Aww. So it's a dead heat.
Yeah.
And unlike when Alex messaged you while you were away asking you what your pick was and you went, what are you talking about?
I had literally no idea what you were talking about because it was in the wrong chat, right? I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'll just say it anyway. I'd asked him a question about something else entirely unrelated, which he ignored for about a week. Then I get this random message going, who's your winner? And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It was Tuesday at like 3 p.m.
That's true.
That should have given you a clue.
He came in from the beach and then I was like, what's this? What's this message? Honestly, I messaged him back, not in anger, but in just pure like, he Derren Browned me. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? My brain just scrambled.
Yeah, he wanted to know what your winner was. Because,
for the podcast.
Yeah, because we were having trouble. It was close to being a draw.
What week was it?
I don't know. Was it Karate Kid week?
I would have picked Karate Kids.
Yes. Karate Kid week, I actually had to make him change his mind.
Right.
On air.
Well, over what?
He picked No Retreat, No Surrender.
Did he?
He was like, oh, if I was having mates over and I was watching something again, it would be No Retreat. And I was like, that's never been our criteria, is if I'm watching again with mates after a few beers, it's what's the better film? And I mean, afterwards in the pub, he did say to me, thank God I changed my mind. Okay. Like, that would have been ridiculous if I'd stuck with that.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, but it sounds awesome.
It is awesome, but it's bad, you know? So the winner this week, based on Alex's vote, he hasn't given a reason.
Fine.
Annoying, but he is working today. So he's just messaged me very quickly and written Romancing the Stone 100%.
Okay. No, I think it's the right
decision. So there wasn't even a percent off there. 100% from Alex.
The full vote.
He did tell me last week, which he shouldn't have, that he thought The Lost City was awful.
Yeah, okay.
Which put me in a bad frame of mind when I went to watch
it.
We shouldn't do that.
Yeah. When I went to watch it, I couldn't have been more receptive and more happy because I'm knackered from coming back off holiday and I just want something so pleasant and easy because I don't want to feel on downer about being back from holiday. And it just did everything for me in that mood. If I'd been more critical, I'm not sure I would feel the same, but I can't sort of undo how I feel.
Fine.
It was good for me.
Fine. So we have a winner, Romancing the Stone by 2-1. I'm just hoping now that Banter Swag 42069 wasn't a big Lost City fan.
Well, we'll find out.
We'll be in trouble.
Yeah. Well, me and you will be in trouble.
Yes.
But Alex, by his absence.
You miserable bastard. Yeah. But if you want to write a review like Banter Swag 42069 did, we'd love it. Just don't make it personal. No. As I've said before, if you want to watch us in action, we're at ClashPod on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok, and on YouTube now.
It's got all of them. Is that all of them?
No, Snapchat.
Okay, but that's just for putting cat ears on or something, isn't it?
Let's look ahead to next week. So the clue I gave you was Alex's clue. I'm not taking credit for it. It was Into the Spider-Verse. We then followed that up with Vicky's clue, which I think we're going to film afterwards. Vicky, what is the clue?
With 8 power comes 8 responsibility.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. And that's because next week's films are Arachnophobia and 8-Legged Freaks. That's Arachnophobia and 8-Legged Freaks. I think I had to rent both of them.
Okay.
I rented one on Sky, but they're both available on Amazon to rent. So, and that's in the UK. So, yeah. Spiders.
I know, and you're not scared of spiders, so...
Not really, no.
Very different experience for you as for me.
Are you dreading watching these two?
A little bit, because I'm not brilliant. I'm not the worst person in the world, but we live in an old house and the spiders we get are fucking massive.
Yeah.
And if one of them legs it out from under the telly during one of these films, I'm not going to deal with that brilliantly well.
Yeah, my missus didn't watch them with me.
Nah.
She wouldn't watch them with me. She said, you can do them while I'm out. But... Yeah, this is a worry for me. Like, will our listenership drop that week because there are that many people that are too frightened of spiders?
Oh.
What I will say is, if you're too afraid of spiders, don't watch the films, but do listen to the episodes.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. The episodes won't
don't
be scary.
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, yeah. I think is the phrase.
The episodes won't be scary.
Stay with us. Yeah. Just don't watch the movies.
Yeah. And they're not that scary. They're quite funny, really.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, that is your lot. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back on Monday with Arachnophobia.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.